the following program contains graphic material, including offensive language. Viewer discretion is advised.
She's got the news. She talks with newsmakers. She encourages us to laugh, and she cries with us. Speaking truth to power and questioning authority daily, it's the Nicole Sandler Show.
All right, welcome to a brand new week. It's a Monday. I'm Nicole Sandler, coming to you live at NicoleSandler.com, the Progressive Voices Network, Facebook Live, Periscope, Twitch, still not YouTube, although we are uploading the shows to YouTube after the fact. Just can't stream live there. Still working on it. Whatever. Well, this is a weird time. Today is the first day of the Democratic National Convention. And if we go back 12 years to 2008, I had just lost my job. It was the Friday before the start of the Democratic Convention in 2008, where Barack Obama was nominated, or accepted the nomination, I guess is more accurate. And that day, that morning, the Friday before, it was August 22nd, so it was a week later, 12 years ago, I had been hosting the morning show on WINZ 940 Winds in Miami. It was then a progressive talk station owned by Clear Channel. That day, that Friday, I had just finished telling the listeners how we were going to cover the convention beginning Monday and things we were going to do that week. Finished the show at 10 o'clock. It was the morning show. Turned off the mic, looked up, and there was the programming assistant standing in the door to the studio who said, "Hey, Ken wants to see you." Ken being the program director. I thought, all right. Well, we had just had our best ratings ever, so it couldn't be, you know, anything bad. And then I walked back to his office and was fired. Was told nothing. What I found out over the course of the weekend was they were replacing me on a progressive talk station with Don Imus, because Clear Channel was preparing to flip South Florida's only progressive talk station to the fourth sports talk station in town, because, you know, that's what South Florida needed, was a fourth sports station. Screw progressive, you know, Democrats. We had three or four right-wing talk stations, and that's all we needed, right? So anyway, that was 12 years ago. I went home Monday morning. I launched the new Radio or Not podcast, and sort of have been doing the online thing ever since. Of course, I had a little detour to Air America in the middle there, but always kept the thing going. So we've been going now for over a dozen years. And here we are on the precipice of another convention at a time when the insane president is working to, sabotage the U.S. Postal Service. Unbelievable. So we got a busy show for you today. Will Bunch, columnist for the Philadelphia Inquirer, has written about both those things over the course of the last week, the convention and how maybe it's time for the conventions to come to an end, and the attack, the full-on assault on the Postal Service. So we're going to talk to Will Bunch in just a moment here. And then we're going to do sort of a Monday music segment afterwards, not with an artist, but there's a new South Florida compilation that is just being released today. It made the front page of the Sunday, well, not the front page, but of the entertainment section of the Miami Herald. And it's a new anti-gun protest album. So we'll delve into that a little bit. But before we get to any of it, we got to start the week with a song. I asked for it on Thursday. Lauren Mayer gave us a version on Friday. And today, the master sings, Randy Rainbow, gives us Kamala. So take it away, Randy Rainbow.
I have no doubt that I picked the right person to join me as the next Vice President of the United States of America, and that's Senator Kamala Harris.
Joe Biden kept a lid on who he would choose to help make Trump's first term his last hurrah. But now he's giving everyone the good news. It's Kamala.
I am incredibly honored.
Will she be crowned America's new VP? Elizabeth and Bernie say, well, duh. VP. He's gonna
hunt. Let me take this opportunity to welcome her to the race.
Kamala. Kamala. A name that makes her critics fume.
We will admit we did not see this coming.
But Kamala.
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 Can sure light up a room. With 4 more years of this, we might not make it. The sinking ship we're in won't stay afloat. And though you might say, nah, don't cite her every flaw. But cause frankly, I don't give a sh**. Just vote for Kamala.
What exactly do you know about Kamala Harris?
They say that she's a lawyer and a scholar. You dare pronounce her name Kamala. It's Kamala.
That is what's called leadership.
Kamala. Kamala. Just watch her squash him like a bug.
And as I said, I can't wait to get out there.
Kamala.
Kamala.
Kamala. Her husband's name is Doug. And though Trump calls her phony, mean, and nasty, no doubt she's more qualified than he. She sold me when I saw her come for Kavanaugh. For no one makes a grown man cry like she can. Kamala.
She was probably nastier than even Pocahontas.
Her rivals spout offensive speculation. Her choice is just anathema. He's Kamala.
Pretty.
The president keeps entertaining queries. Whose urban might be against the law. And pushing crazy racist birther theories. On Kamala. 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 She's finally come to save the day.
Because I'm in this race to win.
Kamala.
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 Kamala. Girl, don't get in her way. So lest you think there's ages till November, just blink but once and then before you know, October and voila.
I'll see you in Utah.
Girl, get a chaperone.
Then meet my brand new mom and daddy, Joe.
Ah, Randy Rainbow. Gotta love him. He is the master of the political song parody. All right. Well, welcome. Welcome back to the show. It is Nicole Sandler. And if you're watching on the video stream, you see a familiar face there, though he doesn't usually join us by video. I'm thrilled he is today. Will Bunch is a columnist at the Philadelphia Inquirer. He's one of those people who gets to write about whatever he wants and has been channeling my mind in the last few days. Well, he does it all the time anyway. Hey, Will Bunch.
Hey, Nicole. How you doing?
I'm doing okay. How about you?
I'm good. I'm getting ready to cover a convention. It's weird. I feel like I should be in Milwaukee, you know, eating bratwurst. And instead, here I am in my undisclosed location outside of Philadelphia. It feels not right.
Right. Well, if you were in Milwaukee, you'd probably be there alone, you and a wedge of cheese, because it's not right. Happening there. In fact, you wrote a column on Thursday. I used to love political conventions. Now I hope they die. Is the headline. Now, I know you don't write the headlines, but is that an accurate representation of what you were trying to get across?
Pretty much. I had a pretty similar headline, and my editor had a slightly different idea, but yeah, I mean, sort of. I mean, to me, it's just, you know, when I look back on it, it's kind of remarkable the fact that the first two political conventions that I remember, which were 1968, and I have to say I was 9 years old, but that's the kind of the whole point. As a 9 year old, I had no interest in politics. And then I happened, because my parents had some friends over, I saw that 68 Democratic convention. I saw what was happening outside the convention, the chaos in the streets. And I was mesmerized, you know, I took a side. I don't think I have to. I don't think it's any secret what side I picked between the cops and the hippies, and kind of lived up to that ever since. And I just wanted to know more about the world around me, really, from that convention on. And in fact, when the Democrats had their convention in 1972 that nominated George McGovern, now I'm 13 years old, and mm-hmm. I should be interested in girls or whatever, but instead I was staying up till two in the morning on this little black and white TV in my bedroom, watching the chaos as they tried to get through the George McGovern nomination. And it's really after that, after that Watergate happened right after that, and I just went straight into wanting to become a journalist, and it's just been a nonstop train ride ever since, but it's hard. Like I said, if I to anybody who's under 40 years old, mm-hmm. if I trying to explain why conventions had that kind of effect on me, I don't even know if I could do it, because that they really for several decades now, they've just been these glorified infomercials, and I've been
That's
to
it.
Them. I've been to a half dozen of them mm-hmm. now. There's some good times because you're on other people and it's fun, but in terms of significance, I'm really, other than maybe Barack Obama's speech in 2004, I'm hard pressed to think of something that happened at a convention that really had lasting import beyond that moment.
Right. And it seems like in recent years, they've been more and more pre-produced, more slick, slick productions, and less to do with the, the business of nominating a nominee.
Well, one thing, and I tried to get at this a little bit in my piece, and I probably didn't do it very well, but the thing is, the idea used to be, all right, we're going to get everybody from the party in one room, and we're a big tent party. We've got a lot of people. We're going to have some differences. Part of the purpose of the convention is to hash out those differences, and when they used to do it that way, it could be really ugly. And at the 1968 convention, one reason there was so much anger and chaos was because they were debating whether to endorse a plank for ending the Vietnam War or not. And it was a very close vote, and it lost. And that vote would never be held today. They would, let's smooth this over, because we don't want, if people see us airing our differences in public, that could hurt us in the election. Humphrey lost that election, and the chaos in the convention was one of the reasons, which it's understandable. Everybody wants to win, heaven forbid, the 2016 Democratic convention was in Philadelphia, my hometown. So obviously I was there for a lot of what happened. And, there was so much anger directed at the Bernie delegates or people even to the left of the Bernie delegates who were outside protesting. It's like, how dare you, do anything that's going to hurt Hillary's chances against Trump. But then on the other hand, what is democracy if you're not supposed to, if you're not allowed to air your grievances? Right?
Exactly. And so during the Obama years, when it's supposed to be, democracy in action, that's when they had those stupid free speech zones. So yeah, you could protest, but you were three blocks away behind a rope line. What's the point?
Yeah. At some point in the last 50 years, the idea of winning in politics, you can only win if there's no dissension. That was the kind of the lesson of 1968 and maybe 1972 to some degree. And then ironically, the one time the Republicans had a really kind of contentious convention was in 1976 with Reagan and Gerald Ford, and they lost, uh-huh. So everybody absorbed this message, keep it fast moving, keep it clean, keep it quiet. So it's an infomercial, this year in 2020, for all the hype about, a virtual convention and they'll just be giving speeches from their basements or whatever, it's really not going to be that different from before, because, it's just going to be a series of speeches. And, this pandemic has kind of laid bare the fact that there really wasn't anything there before, just a kind of a colorful backdrop and reporters, I've covered these things, and you go there for the week and you have to write five stories to justify your expense account,
right.
And maybe there aren't really five stories worth doing, but that's, and multiply that by 20,000. Well, this year you're not going to have that. So it's kind of like the, It's kind of like the emperor's new clothes of conventions. You know?
Well, it certainly is. But there's another frustrating element to this, Will Bunch. And here's the deal. Yesterday, we had gotten the rundown. So everything is pared down this year, obviously. There's nothing happening in Milwaukee. It's all going to be virtual. There are four stages, one in L.A., one, I guess, in New York, one in Delaware, and one somewhere else. I don't know. And then we heard who the speakers were, and then we heard AOC was going to speak, and then we heard, well, AOC only gets 60 seconds because John Kasich is going to deliver a full speech. Excuse me, the most exciting personality on the Democratic side to come along in a long time and excite the young people who we need to get out and vote, they cut her back to a minute-long pre-recorded thing so that John Kasich can talk. And not only John Kasich, tonight we also get Meg Whitman and we get Christy Todd Whitman. So one Republican is not enough. We have to have three. What?
I'm calling it a Whitman samplers, you know, so, you know, two Whitmans, right? You know, I'm surprised they didn't ask Slim Whitman or Dick Whitman from Mad Men or something. But, I'm actually going to be, I have my weekly newsletter that I do now is going to drop tomorrow. It's also kind of like a column and it's going to drop tomorrow. And I'm going to focus on exactly what you're talking about.
Good.
about and particularly the AOC thing, because, you know, a lot of times they say, well, younger people, you know, like we have a congressman from here in Philadelphia who's actually pretty good. He's not super well known, Brendan Boyle, and you know, he's getting the 1 minute treatment. And like with that, I can see, even though I like Brendan, but you know, I can see, well, nobody in the country really knows him real well. You want to keep people tuned in. All right. But then AOC has got to be, you know, honestly the most popular person in the Democratic Party right now. I mean, you know, on social media, look at her Twitter feed. And more importantly, look at who she's popular with. She's popular with people under 35 in particular. You know, she's 31 herself, you know, or 30 or 31. And I mean, the Democrats want to win this election, but they also want to win the future. You know, they don't want to just, you know, muddle through with 4 years of Biden and then hope for the best after that. You know, they really should be using this opportunity to proceed on every front. I mean,
they should,
you know, of course, you know, Trump is a 9-alarm fire. We have to beat him. You know, Biden is the consensus way to do that. I think we're all getting behind that. Even people on the farther left are, you know, down, you know, look at people like Noam Chomsky and Angela Davis, right?
Exactly. They realize that for the greater good, we need to get Trump out of there. I had a Norman Solomon from Roots Action on the show on Friday talking about this new Vote Trump Out campaign they've got going, aimed at people like me who just, you know, Biden was not the guy we wanted, but we realized the importance of getting Trump out. Then we push Biden from the left. And a lot of people on the left are coming to that realization and are getting with the program, but you got the party saying, we'll be the party of never Trumpers. Let's just turn into MSNBC and it be all never Trumpers all the time. Hey, we'll be Republican light. That's not what we want.
No, I find it flabbergasting. I think I also, you mentioned the Whitmans. I think I heard Susan Molinari, who is a congresswoman from Staten Island, who, you know, was kind of briefly popular for a time, I want to say maybe in the early 2000s. Like, I can't even remember exactly when her brief kind of moment in the sun was. Like, but the bottom line is, in 2020, you know, 90% of people don't even know who Susan Molinari is.
Yep.
Actually, she was on TV as a pundit about 3 or 4 months ago. And I was one of those things where I was staring at the screen for like 3 or 4 minutes, like, this woman looks vaguely familiar, but I've totally forgotten who she is. And that was Susan Molinari. Now they're giving her at least as much time as AOC and probably more.
Probably more.
You know, and Bernie's speaking tonight. That's great. You know, they love the fact that Bernie and Biden get along so well. But the squad, right? I mean, mm-hmm. AOC, Rashida Tlaib,
Ilhan Omar.
I know Ilhan drives
some crazy,
but you know. And the new one, Jamal Bowman,
Cory Bush.
Yeah.
Right.
I mean, I mean, those six people should absolutely be spotlighted. And their appeal, they have a broad appeal, you know, to young people across the spectrum, you know, and it's exactly part of what the Democrats need, you know. And so, like you said, Nicole, I mean, they're setting up this dynamic, right, where, you know, all of us are going to do what it takes to get Biden over, you know, push him over the finish line, right, and on November 3rd. You know, on November 4th, you know, we're going to be, you know, I think a lot of us are going to be out there with the Sunrise Movement or whatever, sitting in, you know, Kamala Harris's office or whatever, saying, you know, do the Green New Deal. You know, I mean, that's what the dynamic is, you know. And the thing is, they can ease that transition. They did, you know, I know, you know, I give Biden some credit. He, you know, he spent a lot of time with Bernie. You know, he's, you know, Elizabeth Warren, who I love, you know, has been able to talk to him on a regular basis. That's good. But I get everything you're saying,
Will, and I agree with you. My problem is in the party itself seems to never learn from their mistakes. The fact that tonight, night one, is a Republican, reunion is troubling to me. I am not ready to turn this party over to Never Trumpers, Republican lights. I'm sorry. If they want to become Democrats, come on in. But stop with this, you know, treating them like they're us. They're not. And if they have their druthers, they'll undo everything we've gotten done, like Social Security and Medicare and Medicaid. They don't have the same goals we do. Why are we catering to them?
I couldn't agree with you more, and you're right. You know, when I saw this lineup for the convention, I was very discouraged. And you know, and we can't blame it just on Biden, no. Right? It's the broader party establishment.
Tom Perez
is a big part of it, and yep. You know, I mean, he should be replaced, but you know, with Biden at the head of the party,
good luck with that.
I mean, the thing is, I mean, here's my quick take on Biden is. I think what's good about Biden is that he's not very rigid ideologically, and he's a good politician and seeing where things are going. He does understand, I think, that things are moving to the left, and he's willing to listen. I think all of those things are good. But at the end of the day, I think Biden, while he's not about ideology, he's very much about relationships. And his relationships with Chris Stodd, you know, Ed Rendell, you know, who
they're all gone. They're all yeah. out already. How right. about embracing the next generation, the right. AOCs, the squad, the people we need to propel this party forward? They're still living in the past. So, yeah. Will Bunch, let's move on, because I do yeah. want to touch on this other subject that you wrote about twice this week. And as you said in your column, you don't usually revisit a subject, but we are. And maybe we should have started with the post office, because this is a full frontal assault on our democracy by the Trump administration. And Donald Trump had the gall a short while ago to tweet out, "Save the U.S. Postal Service."
Yeah, I just saw that right before I came on the show.
Save the post office. Are you kidding me?
It's classic Trump. You know, he's trying to create a fog for, you know, his base. You know, there's something going on with the post office, and you know, I guess Trump is trying to save it because he said he's trying to save. You know, I mean, it's just ridiculous. Well, in my columns, especially the latest one that was published yesterday, I'm calling it a coup, because when you think about what a coup d'état is, basically it's when either the military or a government that's under siege seizes the crucial choke points of a country, right? Mm-hmm. And you know, the airports, the state TV station, I guess that would be Fox News in America, right, or whatever. But you know, in Trump's case, he's seizing the post office. You know, I mean, you couldn't be any more blatant. And what's so fascinating about this election is, I mean, the post office has always been an important part of being an American. But I mean, what's happened this year? You know, we all remember what it was like in April and May, and voting, you know, people could get sick from voting and going to the polls.
That's right.
We have to make it easier to vote. You know, five states have been voting by mail for years. We should do this. You saw this very unusually rapid for our politics, you know, very sustained momentum in so many states pass legislation that made it easier to vote by mail, and it all made sense. And the reason, think about it. The reason it made sense was because, you know, if you've been American, if you've been around for a few years, like you and I have, Nicole, you know, the post office has always had a reputation. I mean, you know, it's not perfect. They they make mistakes and they have flaws, but it has a reputation for being nonpartisan, an institution that's basically dependable, that's always there. And people couldn't imagine that it could be politicized and corrupted the way it's been and as quickly as it's been. You know, it was kind of a failure of imagination. And I get it. I'm not blaming the Democrats, and a lot of Republicans too voted for these measures back in the spring to expand it. And so now you have a situation where one thing that's always protected our elections is thanks to federalism, it's a very state and local oriented affair, right? The president is elected by this hodgepodge of state and local election boards control the voting and the vote counting or whatever. Now with the post office so deeply involved in elections, all of a sudden the federal government controls this choke point of half of all the votes are being handled by the federal government, right?
Right.
And it's now we can see that this was a mistake, you know, at least when you have a dictator oriented guy like Trump in there, it's a mistake, you know, to do that, I think. And
it's a mistake to what? To let people vote by mail? I mean, it's a mistake to have Trump as president. It's a mistake to let him, you know, look to the fact that he can unilaterally appoint someone who is a big donor and a major investor in competitors to the U.S. Postal Service to be its postmaster general. That's the problem. Giving this president unchecked powers is the problem. And what we haven't given him, he's just taken. And the problem, as I see it, is we have a toothless Congress who doesn't know how to stand up to this man and perform their constitutionally mandated oversight.
I agree. And we'll have to see what happens with this hearing on Monday. I mean, I think the evidence is already pretty much there, but I think as more evidence even comes out about these things that we're hearing about, such as taking these mail sorters, which, you know, perfectly good mail sorters.
Right. And why are they even doing that?
Right?
Why?
You know? Yeah. Right. Right. I mean, to me, that's criminal. And you know, I think based on what they find out about that, there's a real strong case that Louis DeJoy should be impeached. You can impeach the Postmaster General.
Without a doubt.
That. You know, I mean, the thing is, Nicole, it's a very complicated situation because even as recently as a month or two ago, a lot of us were saying, well, you know, Trump won't let the post office participate in the bailout, the coronavirus bailout packages. We've got to get them the money. They need the money.
Yeah.
And now, only now we understand that you could give them $1 trillion. And if the head of the post office is destroying machines, you know, taking your corner post office box, mailbox away, you know,
he's still going to do it.
Right. It wouldn't matter. So the money is not the issue. So it's a bind. So to me, the only solution is, I mean, Congress has got to have the hearings. They've got to crack down on DeJoy from a, you know, oversight point of view, like you said. But the other thing about the election in November is I think we need a massive organized effort. And I've seen some evidence today that, you know, the Biden campaign, for what it's worth, I mean, I don't know if the Biden campaign is the right people to run this, but I'm seeing them thinking along the same lines in terms of a coordinated nationwide effort to educate voters on the ways to vote that are available to them, and then, you know, souls to the polls type operation, you know, make sure whatever assistance people need to vote in the earliest and most countable way. I mean, and I think there's kind of a hierarchy. I mean, to me, the best way to vote in November, if you can, and not you can't do this in every state, and that's why it gets so complicated, is you know, to get a mail-in or an absentee type ballot, fill it out yourself,
and then hand deliver it. Exactly.
Either
hand deliver it.
But
people don't know that in May, like here in Florida, and this is how we've done it for years and years and years. We get absentee ballots, we fill them out, we bring them back to the supervisor of elections office for our county, the Broward supervisor of elections office. My husband brought ours back in for the primary here in Florida, which is tomorrow, the other day, and they actually had a drop box out front. So, you know, do that. I wouldn't trust the U.S. mail service right now because of what they're doing. But a lot of people think you can fill it out and bring it to the poll on Election Day. A lot of places you cannot do that. So you really need to check with your county.
You have to know it's different
everywhere.
It's different in every state, and it often varies from county to county. And
that's
you
right.
need to know what the system is. You know, I mean, you know, a fair number of people are saying, and understandably, well, if I'm worried about my ballot getting lost in the mail, I'm just going to have to accept the risk of voting in person on November 3rd. You know, it's a risk like going to the supermarket, perhaps, you know, which I agree with that. But I it's interesting. I mean, there are a lot of people I know, especially people who are activists on this issue, who are very worried about a different problem, right? Which is the electronic vote.
Yes. That's another topic. That's something we've been talking about for years.
It's very complicated, you know, and, you know, I mean, there's this whole discussion because with Trump, you know, I mean, first of all, there is no reason to a lot of what he does, but you know, I mean, there is this conversation about, well, what's his game? I mean, does he want you to vote by mail? And so the post office will lose your vote. Does he want you to vote by mail, even though your vote probably will get counted eventually, but maybe not on November 3rd, because he's trying to create, you know, a week or 2 weeks of uncertainty and unrest and be able to claim that he's the winner? Or does he want you to go to the polls in person? So, you know,
he doesn't want you to vote at all.
He doesn't. I mean, the bottom line is the more talk there is about the vote being not safe somehow, or your vote's not going to be counted, you know, it certainly can create, it certainly has the potential to create this kind of cynicism that will just have people, some people throw their hands in the air and say, why bother? And right. That would be the best outcome. And so that's why it's so incumbent on the Democrats. You know, I mean, God knows what they're going to talk about these next 4 days, and you know, or
the Republicans. That's what they're going to talk about. We're the Big Ten party, and we're welcoming in all the Republicans. Screw you, progressives, but Republicans are welcome.
Yeah, or I should say what they're going to talk about these 3 days, because one day is all Republican, right? So what are Democrats going to talk about the 3 days they haven't given away to Republicans? I mean,
the week is young. They can still add more to the, you know, look, they added the Whitmans and, you know, whoever else, because we not enough Republicans.
Yeah. You know, I mean, they could have given AOC 9 extra minutes, too.
You think?
They're not doing that because it's very tone deaf. It's just ridiculous. It's just going to hurt the party, and it's going to hurt, you know, the push for a more progressive future. It's just going to hurt that in the long run. You know, it's very discouraging. You know, I'm going to watch, I'm going to listen, I'm going to hope for the best. I'm sure over 8 hours, there'll be some good people who'll say some good things.
I'm excited to hear Bernie. I'm excited for the 60 seconds of AOC, which I'm so insulted by that. And I've placed all the blame on Tom Perez, but sorry, I also blame it on Joe Biden, because he's the titular head of the Democratic Party, and he should know better than this. And for all the pronouncements, all the, you know, the nonsense with the, you know, unity, you know, panels with AOC and Bernie and all that, it's bullshit. Because now today I read something about, well, you know, that public option they're talking about. Biden's probably more going to concentrate on just shoring up the Affordable Care Act. And if they give us more of the same, he's going to lose. He's going to lose. And today, you know, look, right now it looks like an outlier, but CNN, the latest CNN poll, has Donald Trump closing the gap to within 4 points. That's not okay. People need to get their heads out of their asses, and the Democratic Party especially needs to stop with this bending over backwards for the Republicans. Republicans will vote for Republicans. You want to win the future, you put forth a progressive future. But Will, I don't mean to be yelling at you. I'm frustrated.
I'm sorry.
Sorry.
It wasn't my idea. I promise.
I know. It's just frustrating. And I know you feel my pain, because I read you.
I agree with you totally on this.
I mean,
you're interested. I mean, I do think the CNN poll was hopefully a little bit of an outlier.
But
you know what? The race, you know, given how badly Trump's performance has been, the race is, I think the race is closer.
It will, and it'll tighten.
And it will tighten. Well, it will tighten, and it will and it will tighten because I think of Biden's fear of taking any risk.
Yeah, and I think you're right.
And a lot of what they think is taking a risk isn't taking a risk. It's smart politics. And highlighting AOC would have been so smart.
It would have been. Will Bunch, you find him at the Philadelphia Inquirer, inquirer.com. Find him on Twitter at @Will_Bunch. Subscribe to that newsletter because it's like you get an extra column during the week delivered right to your inbox. So, Will Bunch, it's always a pleasure talking with you. Thank you for writing about the things that I'm screaming about every day. It makes my job a little easier sometimes.
Well, thanks for having me, Nicole. It's always a pleasure. I really enjoyed it.
For me, too. Thank you so much, Will. You take care and have fun watching the convention.
Oh gosh, yeah, I know. I need some of that. I need some of that Milwaukee's finest beer.
Oh my goodness, tell me about it. And I don't even drink beer, but I'll take it at this point. All right, thanks, Will. I'll see you later. Bye bye, Will Bunch. Everyone. Yes, and if you're not reading his column, you really should. So follow him on Twitter. You'll get the column when it comes up, and definitely check him out. All right, we're going to take a very quick break and come back on the other side to talk musica. Because there's a new album that's just being released today. It's making all kinds of waves here in South Florida, in the Miami Herald, in the South Florida Sun Sentinel. And we're going to speak with the co-founder of the record label that's released this record today, Make Music Not War, Put Down That Weapon. It is a benefit for guitars over guns. And you know that's a subject we like around here. So we'll talk with Rich. I had his name right before. Uloa, next of YNT Records. Don't go away. It's the Nicole Sandler Show at NicoleSandler.com and the Progressive Voices Network. All right. So while Progressive Voices is in a commercial, I'm actually going to play for you a new ad put out today by Republican Voters Against Trump. I will tweet this out and I'll Facebook it. This is a guy who was he's the former chief of staff of the Department of Homeland Security. That's who is speaking in this ad by Republican Voters Against Trump. And oh my God, listen to what this man says. This ad is breaking news. So take it away, former Republican.
I served as the chief of staff of the Department of Homeland Security under the Donald Trump administration. I would go into the office, I would read my intelligence brief, and then it was my job to help the Department of Homeland Security to keep our country safe. What we saw week in and week out, and for me after 2.5 years in that administration, was terrifying. We would go in to try to talk to him about a pressing national security issue, cyber attack, terrorism threat. He wasn't interested in those things. To him, they weren't priorities. But the president wanted to exploit the Department of Homeland Security for his own political purposes and to fuel his own agenda. The California wildfires, on a phone call with the Federal Emergency Management Agency, he told FEMA to cut off the money and to no longer give individual assistance to California. He told us to stop giving money to people whose houses had burned down from a wildfire because he was so rageful that people in the state of California didn't support him, and that politically, it wasn't a base for him. The policies at the border, he wanted to restart zero tolerance and separate families. He said he wanted to go further and have a deliberate policy of ripping children away from their parents to show those parents that they shouldn't come to the border in the first place. A lot of the time, the things he wanted to do not only were impossible, but in many cases illegal. He didn't want us to tell him it was illegal anymore because he knew that there were, and these were his words, he knew that he had magical authorities. He was one of the most unfocused and undisciplined senior executives I've ever encountered. I came away completely convinced, based on firsthand experience, that the president was ill-equipped and wouldn't become equipped to do his job effectively. And what's worse, was actively doing damage to our security. People who are still serving in this administration have said to me, just wait until the second term. It'll be no holds barred. It'll be shock and awe. We'll do what we want. Given what I've experienced in the administration, I have to support Joe Biden for president. And even though I'm not a Democrat, even though I disagree on key issues, I'm confident that Joe Biden will protect the country. And I'm confident he won't make the same mistakes as this president.
Wow. Republican Voters Against Trump. Their website is rvat.com, Republican Voters Against Trump. His name is Miles Taylor, former chief of staff of the Department of Homeland Security. Again, pulling the curtain back from around Donald Trump. Republicans are getting this. And I appreciate them speaking out, as they should. I just don't want them taking over the time at the Democratic National Convention tonight. That makes me angry. All right. Nobody asked me. All right. Yeah, I'll tell you what. Let's bring progressive voices back from their break and do this. All right. Here we go.
The Nicole Sandler Show on the Progressive Voices Network and NicoleSandler.com.
All right. As you know, a couple of months ago, I started doing a Monday music feature. You may know or may not, my background is in music radio, and music is a big part of my life. By the way, I need to give a shout out to my former colleagues, Mark and Brian, whose show I produced. .org. Republican Voters Against Trump.org. Thank you. RVOT.org. RVAT. Republican Voters Against Trump. Sorry. Just, you know, it's like a math thing. .org. Okay. So back in the early 90s, from 1990 to 94, I produced the Mark and Brian program at KLOS in Los Angeles. We went syndicated during that time. So we were on stations all over the West Coast. I left in the middle of 94 to go do my thing at a music intensive format and stop with the goofy stuff. But I'm very proud of the work I did with Mark and Brian. And today it was announced that they are the newest inductees into the Radio Hall of Fame for the class of 2020. And I'm very proud of that. And actually another radio pro who I worked with before that, Jim Kerr at WPLJ in New York, the day the nominations were announced, sent me a message early that morning. And he said, as far as I can tell, if Mark and Brian get in, you're the only person who has produced two Radio Hall of Fame morning shows. So I got that going for me. And I don't even get a prize or an award for it. So I'll just pat myself on the back. All right. That said, I started this Monday music thing a couple of months ago because I think music is an important part of my life anyway. And I think music has healing properties. So we're not doing it every week anymore because to do live music on the radio over Zoom, we've learned there are a lot of problems inherent in it, mostly during the sound chain. So while we're going to still do them, when we do them, it'll take a pre-taping thing and the artist recording the audio on their end and sending it to me so I can mix it together properly. Today, we don't have a live artist. We have, a record company executive. I'll tell you what, let's get started, okay?
We could all use some healing these days, so we turn to the power of music. Each Monday, we welcome another artist to
Most
share
Mondays.
Some songs and stories as the Nicole Sandler Show presents the Monday Music Sunset Sessions.
All right, so it's Monday music time, and we turn to Rich Ulloa, who is the co-founder of Y&T Music down here in South Florida. Hey, Rich, thank you for joining us today, and congratulations.
Well, thank you so much. It's really an honor to be on your show.
Oh, wow.
I've been listening to the Voices Progressive Network for years. I was a carrier at the post office, and my whole day, it would start with Stephanie and to Tom and to you, Randy.
Oh, wow. Awesome.
Oh, yeah.
Awesome.
That's how I got through it.
Amazing. And so, see, and here you are. You're in the music industry, but you were a letter carrier. So I've got to ask
14
you.
14 years, yes.
14 years. So what do you think about what's going on with the post office stuff right now?
It's insane. It really is. But, you know, it all starts from that terrible law that was passed in the lame duck Congress.
And yep.
When Bush was president, they on a party line vote
yep.
to fund the health care and pension benefits.
75 within, years.
Yes. And we've never the post office has never recovered from that. You know, the post office does not lose money on operations. It's strictly this law that has totally ruined, you know.
Right. The post office was doing just fine
exactly.
until this law that made them fund health and pension plans 75 years in advance. So for postal workers of the future who have not even been born yet, no other
exactly.
industry has that. No other, it just doesn't exist anywhere else. And that this was laid around them. And as you mentioned, it was during the lame duck session while Bush yes. was still in office. And this is something that when the Democrats had control of everything, they should have fixed. And they didn't.
You know what? I totally agree. I love President Obama, but he had a chance there to fix it, and he messed up. He
absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. So, Rich, where in your career and in co-founding Y&T Records and the record store that the record company, the label was named for, where did that fall in your timeline?
Well, I opened my first record store in 1981. And it was Yesterday and Today Records in Miami. We had three stores at one point. And in 1990, I discovered the Mavericks, a local band down here in Miami. And I approached them to do an independent record. And that was the first release on my independent label, Y&T,
wow.
Y&T Music. And since then, we've put out, like, if you count all the singles, vinyl, 7-inchers, and EPs, we've put out like 36 releases.
Nice.
In the 30 years. And, you know, I kept the record stores open as long as I could, but the industry changed in the late 90s, you know, early 2000s.
Yep.
And unfortunately, I wasn't able to sustain it. But, you know, so I got a real job. But I did still did the music projects on, you know, as much as I could. And I retired from the Postal Service 2 years ago. And along with my new partners, Jim Worster and Don Sarley, we have relaunched Y&T.
Okay.
And we're busier than ever, busier than ever.
Well, so let's talk about the reason you're here today, which, I mean, it's nice to talk music anytime. But a couple weeks ago, you sent me information about this record that was coming out, Make Music, Not War, Put Down That Weapon. And it's a collection of artists with South Florida ties who are covering some of the great protest songs of the 60s and 70s, all in a benefit to basically stop gun violence.
Well, yes and no. Okay. The benefit, yes, on the protest songs and the South Florida ties, but the charity that we've affiliated with on this record is called Guitars Over Guns.
Okay.
And I would hope you could visit their website, guitarsoverguns.org. What they do is they mentor underprivileged kids. They have a whole network of volunteers, musicians, studio engineers, studio owners, and they've done incredible work in our community and also in Chicago, providing musical instruments, lessons. And it's not all about music. It's also to encourage the next group of young leaders. And really, the best way to think about it is it's to improve the lives of young people and without, you know, having them exposing them to music. That's the whole focus.
Right. And yeah. And music has, again, I go back to that healing properties. It works on so many levels. And I think it's a necessary part of our lives. I mean, we don't place that much importance on things that distract us from the hassles, from the stressors of life, but they are so important. And
especially to the young kids, it gives them an opportunity to grow as people, you know, in all phases of their lives, not only, you know, learning music, but it's just the mentors who are involved in the program are just fantastic.
That's great. And so that website is guitarsoverguns.org, you said?
Yes.
Yes. Guitarsoverguns.org.
Yeah. Right.
Wonderful. And so you put out this record. Its official release date is today?
Actually, the official release date was the 14th, Friday.
Okay.
And we're having a virtual album, I guess we can call it a CD release party.
Right.
On Facebook and YouTube on Thursday at 8 o'clock, where a bunch of the artists, I think 12 of the 15, have provided music videos or live performances of the songs that they contributed to the record.
Oh, nice! Now, how did you put together this slate of artists who are on this record?
Well, 3 years ago, my partner Jim Worster and myself we decided to do this. You know, he came up with the idea of let's put out an album of South Florida artists doing old protest songs, and I love the idea.
It's a great idea.
And you know, nobody's writing protest songs, or at least they're not getting heard, you know, anymore, and so. My partner Jim and I, we felt this might be an opportunity to maybe expose younger artists and a new generation to some of the great protest songs that we grew up with when we were kids.
Great.
And so we identified some artists. We picked about 40 songs of which we felt were, you know, compelling and great candidates to be covered. And we identified the artists, and it was a process. It took a little while because you have 15 artists who all provided the music, and, you know, they recorded it on their own. But we were very excited about the final release. We really, really think we got some great artists and who created some magical covers.
Great. Well, let's hear one. You mentioned, okay, your partner is Jim Worster. Tell us about Jim. What's his story?
Jim is amazing. He's a local icon down here. He was a history teacher for his whole career.
Nice.
But all while he was doing that, he was a singer, songwriter, troubadour. He's put out like 13 or 14 solo albums.
Wow.
And he's like an icon in our scene down here. You know, we even did a tribute CD to his songs. You know, his albums have been reviewed in a lot of national folk magazines and blogs and websites. And so we started talking about, you know, relaunching our label, and this is our first main project that we wanted to do.
So did he pick the Stephen Stills song we're about to play?
I mean, yes, for what it's worth,
when you talk about great, you know, iconic protest songs of the 60s, that's one. And he has a different take on it. And I appreciate that. And most of these songs do. I have a thing about covers. I like covers as long as the artist makes them their own, gives us a reason to say, and he does. It's a little different than the Stephen Stills version. So let's hear it. His name is Jim Worster. For What It's Worth is on the new album called, hold on, I got to put it up here. Make Music Not, is the album called Make Music Not War or Put Down That Weapon?
Well, it's actually both.
Okay.
It's Put Down That Weapon is actually a Midnight Oil song. You
know, yes, it is.
Band.
Right.
One of the most political bands ever. Mm-hmm. And we have a great cover of that song on the album too. But I wanted the title to say more than just, you know, put down that weapon and, you know, it's anti-guns and everything. So I felt Make Music Not War was a broader stroke. And so that's why we came up with both.
It's a great sentiment. All right. Yeah, so let's listen to Jim Worster's version of For What It's Worth. Here we go.
There's something happening here. What it is ain't exactly clear. There's a man with a gun over there telling me I got to beware. It's time we stop to see what's that sound. Everybody look to see what's going down. Nobody's right if everybody's wrong. Young people speaking their mind, getting so much resistance from behind. Time will stop to see what's that sound. Everybody look to see what's going on. What a few days for the heat. 10,000 people in the streets singing songs and carrying signs, mostly saying hurry for our sides. It's time to stop to see what's that sound. Everybody look to see what's going down. Paranoia strikes deep into your life, it will creep. Starts when you're always afraid. Step out of line, a man come, he gonna take you away. It's time we stop, say what's that sound. Everybody look what's going down. Stop, see, what's that sound? Everybody look, stop, see. say, what's that sound? Everybody look, what? Stop, say, what's that sound? Everybody look and see what's going down.
Nice. That is Jim Worster with a great version of Stephen Stills' For What It's Worth, found on the new album, Put the Weapon Down, right? Make Music, Not War. Put down that weapon. Rich Ulloa of YNT Music is with us. He is the co-founder of the label, and I guess, are you the producer of this album?
Well, Jim and I and Don are all executive producers, but all the individual tracks have been produced by the artist on their own, basically.
Got it.
And
all the proceeds from this record are going to this this organization, guitarsoverguns.org. Yes,
that's correct. 100% of the gross, not net, every single penny that's sold.
Wow.
You know, from the CDs, from global sales to online, you know, everything.
Wow. You know. So how are you making any money?
We're not. Our contribution is actually the production of this record, and you know we feel so strongly about this organization, we decided to do it that way.
Wow, that's awesome. That's really amazing. So again, the record is officially out. The big release party is happening this Thursday night, August 20th, 8 p.m. Eastern, on YNT Music's Facebook and YouTube pages. So I'll put links on the blog today.
Also, we'll be simulcast on Guitars Over Guns. I'm sorry.
And guitarsoverguns.org.
Yeah.
That makes sense. Yeah.
on their Facebook page.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cool. Yeah. Well, again, I'll put links on the blog today where I post the today's podcast. It's NicoleSandler.com/8-17-20. I do always do it that way. Okay. So, you know, August West 9 in the chat room is saying, love Midnight Oil, Put Down That Weapon song also. I had actually pulled a different one to end with. But I'm thinking that's a request, so I need to see if I can just pull it up real quickly and see if we can play that one. Because
I would love you. To
I
play
love
that
being
one.
Spontaneous. All right, I wish you would.
You know, it was recorded in L.A. actually.
Yeah.
Because the artist Amanda Green, who was from here, who we've worked with in the past, she moved to L.A. and she recorded that track at Sunset Sound Studios.
Okay. Nice.
Really, one of the best studios in the world.
So tell us about Amanda Green. Who is she, and what's her ties to South Florida?
Amanda Green is a really great talent. She's a singer-songwriter. A lot of people compare her to Tori Amos, Sarah McLachlan, but she plays a lot of guitar, too. So she's very unique. She's a brilliant artist. I put out 3 CDs by her in the 90s, and she relocated to L.A., and she was one of the first artists I've asked to be on the record.
Wow.
And it was, and she, I was, I, the song that I had in mind for her, believe it or not, was War Pigs by Black Sabbath.
Oh, wow.
Very different. And I felt she would really bring a very different perspective, but she said she wanted to Put Down That Weapon by Midnight Oil. I said, are you kidding
me? And you said,
that's my jam. She didn't even know that. So I said, absolutely. In fact, we're going to call the album Put Down That Weapon.
Awesome.
So,
all right.
That's the story.
Well, then we'll wrap up with that. Again, the record is out. It's available at all those usual places where you can get
online albums. Everywhere. Yeah, Amazon, you name it. All the online stores will have it.
Okay. And and Yesterday and Today Records doesn't exist anymore, or it does?
Well, there is a branch. In 1998, I actually sold one of the stores to one of my managers, and he's kept it open for 20 years.
Wow.
Strictly on vinyl, 90%, I'd say 95% all vinyl.
Wow.
Used, all the record store day, all the new stuff too. Great store.
And what are you doing these days, other than running, you're putting out music on YNT Music, the label?
Putting out music and spending as much time as I can with my 2 adorable grandkids.
Oh, wow. Well, that's good. Awesome. All right. Well, Rich Ulloa, thank you so much. Thank you for doing this record. It's great. I hope people will check it out. Again, I'll put all the details on the blog at NicoleSandler.com. And we'll leave you with Amanda Green's take on Put Down That Weapon by Midnight Oil. Thanks a lot, Rich. It's great talking
to you. Thank you so much, Nicole.
Thank you for having me. You take care. All right,
okay,
everyone.
You too.
Here you go. Bye-bye.
Under the borderline, no place to retire to another time. The
eyes of the world now turn.
And if we think about it, and if we talk about it, and if the skies go dark with rain, can you tell me, will the freedom remain? Put down that weapon, or we'll all be gone. You can't hide nowhere with the torchlight on. And it happens to be an emergency. Some things aren't meant to be. Some things don't come for free. Yeah.
Above the waterline.
Point the finger, yeah. Point the bone. Harbor town that the gray metal ships call home. And if we think about it, and if we talk about it, and if the sea goes boiling black, can you tell me what you do about that? Put down that weapon. I'll be gone. You must speak